Episode 164 of the Cinema Psychos show is coming at you this week. We sit down with Chris Lemke of Ready, Set, Geek to discuss Birds of Prey. We talk about the emancipation of ourselves from the male gaze. We talk about the movie and we have a cool discussion about ratings in DC comic book movies. Is it R? Is it PG-13? John also discusses fluids.
Oh, goody, goody, here it comes.
Welcome to the Cinema Psycho Show.
You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here.
Oh my God, don't stop now!
With your hosts, Ryan, John, and Elaine.
Welcome to the Cinema Psycho Show, the madhouse for film freaks and film fans of all types. I'm your host, Brian Content, and my fellow co-hosts and filmmakers, John and Lane Wolfscroft.
Hi, Brian's class.
Wow.
Jumping right in.
Oh, you're jumping right in,
loved
huh?
Loved it. I loved
jumping
it.
Jumping right in. And I'm going to be really appropriate today. The words you're not going to hear are shit and ass and fuck. Oh, fuck. I got to watch my fucking mouth.
Listen, I think if you just not talk about fluid as much we'll be
just
ahead.
Ease up on the fluids. We're on episode 164 this week, and we actually have a special guest.
Returning guest.
We don't ever have returning guests. Yeah. You know, I think we're at the point now in the podcast where we got to start bringing people back and be like, well, you know, real friend of the show, returning guest, Chris Lemke of Ready, Set, Geek. How you doing here, Chris?
I'm good. I'm actually only here to distribute my film to Brian's class.
Okay.
It's a 3-hour black and white opus and 4x3 of a paper bag being stepped on.
Oh, wow.
I think it says a lot about society.
Oh, okay.
And how I feel.
4x3 is the only true aspect ratio.
4x3 is the only true aspect ratio. Screw you, widescreen and CinemaScope. This week, we had to bring Chris on because we are going to be talking today about Birds of Prey, not the failed TV series from the early 2000s, but the new movie.
TV show? Wait, I watched the show for this.
Oh, shit.
Oh, awkward.
I'm a huge Dina Meyer fan.
I mean, we all are.
What is this Detective Comics you speak of?
Yeah,
Batman?
Batman.
Is there an umlaut?
Yeah, there is. No, we're talking about the new spinoff from the failed Suicide Squad movie.
Academy Award-winning Suicide Squad.
Why do you have to remind me of
why
that?
Do you hurt him,
because
Chris?
Because you love the Oscars so much.
No.
Yeah, if you hate the Oscars so much, why do you care?
That's why I'm not on the Oscar episode, okay? That's why John Lane did it solo, because they would just be like, well, Brian, what's your opinion on Oscars? Fuck him. You know, like, that's it.
Suicide Squad.
Yeah. Suicide Squad. Is that your response to everything? What about Joker? Suicide Squad. We're going to be talking about Birds of Prey or the emancipation of Harley Quinn. Is that
of one
the fantabulous
Harley?
Emancipation the, oh, of one Harley
the
Quinn?
The subhead on that is great. And it's brilliant.
Right off the bat here, I was a cynical, broken asshole and called this movie for weeks Turds of Prey.
So clever, so funny.
You were wrong.
I assumed
it sounds like Birds of Prey, but with poop.
Yes.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
Comedy.
You're a comedy.
Major too.
So funny. So funny.
This is an edgy show.
This is. Look at our back catalog of 163 episodes.
But.
A little bit edgy.
But. This is pretty good.
Yeah.
I expected nothing from DC, and this was pretty good. It wasn't great.
I think DC performs best when we expect nothing.
I think that this may be the best DC foray yet.
This is what they got. This is the best.
They sheltered off the Dark Knight stuff,
I would say, and tried to
start building, you know, competing with Marvel.
In terms of a comic book movie, yes, because I would say like Joker was very good, but that it's not a comic book movie.
I don't want to get into my issues with Joker.
Right.
I saw it last night though, so we could talk if we wanted.
Okay. I think Joker's an amazing central performance with not much going on around it outside I've also seen Scorsese movies from the 70s and the
80s. Let's chat. Yeah. We'll chat later. Love it. Love it.
Yeah, there were times like during Joker where I was just had in my head, na 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 na, Batman.
No, you sang it like three times last night when I was watching.
When
it
he's
for
like
the
jamming scissors into somebody's eyeball and throat, and blood is going everywhere. It's a comic book movie.
Oh my lord, spoiler!
I mean, honestly, like
for Joker,
without getting into it, I actually really liked Joker. I thought it was different.
Right, but it's certainly not a comic book movie.
No, it is, and honestly, we had this conversation before. Yeah. Dark Knight is not a comic book movie either.
No, it's closer. I think what the idea of what a comic book movie is has shifted so much.
Yeah.
And even when you look at the, you know, the all-powerful Marvel banner, what they've done is taken different genres.
Yeah.
And said, okay, let's put a superhero movie that's a heist movie. Let's put a superhero movie that's a 70s war film. Let's do this. Let's do that. And I appreciate that. And it seems like that's what DC and now being run by Geoff Johns, who probably is the only name drop that you and I will understand, Brian.
Yeah.
Is going to try to do. When you see things like Joker is not a comic book movie. It's not a traditional comic book movie. You have this breadth of characters, so we can do interesting things. I thought that this was a really interesting thing that they did with this film.
Well, I think the thing is it's, you know, DC Films has had a bad couple of years. Like really, really shit sandwich couple of years.
They have nothing to lose now.
And well, I think it's just a matter of their problem was they were trying to compete with Marvel. They're trying to be Marvel. That's why they did, you know, the whole Batman v Superman bullshit. That's why they did the Justice League. And they were trying so hard to fit into that Marvel, you know, square peg. But the problem is that DC, its strength has always been in the characters, the rogues gallery.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. You know, I always say that DC has the best rogues gallery.
Yes.
Out of all of the different, between Marvel and DC.
Can I also say something?
Are you going to retort?
Well, I was just going to say that if we're going by like the biggest successes of DC, if we count them as say like this movie and Wonder Woman, they both were directed by women.
I think that's a valid, very fair point.
Women directors. Oh, wait, are you serious?
Oh my god.
Oh,
wow.
I think you can look at that even as a microcosm of, okay, you had Batman versus Superman, you had a dark Superman movie, you had a dark Batman movie, you had this was dark and this
gritty
was
dark. Reboots.
Gritty reboots.
And you had a Wonder Woman film that felt true to Wonder Woman.
Except for that last 20 minutes.
Absolutely. Act 3 falls apart.
Agreed.
And that's why, again, I
get
this.
What the hell, Patty Jenkins? What the fuck was were you going on
but
there?
But again, that's a studio. I felt like that was studio
mandated. That absolutely was studio mandated.
Definitely.
And that goes back to why I feel like this is a stronger overall film. Shazam felt true to that character.
Definitely.
Aquaman, for its ups and downs and octopus playing a drums, felt true-ish to that character. And this felt true to this universe. And I thought if they can at least do that and make good standalone character movies.
Now, is this standalone? Like when the Robert Pattinson Batman movie comes out, is it in the same
but
universe
you can't,
as the Harley Quinn
because thing? You've already said that it ties in with Suicide Squad, which was Affleck.
Which
Batman.
Now they're remaking. So I'm cross-eyed.
I don't think they know what they're doing. I think this is going to tie in because this is going to tie in with Zoe Kravitz's Catwoman.
Oh, does
and
it?
That's part of the Robert Pattinson
movie
one, right?
It takes place in the East End of Gotham, and that's actually Catwoman's territory.
Right.
Yeah. And where is Batman in all of this movie?
That bothered you the entire time. Yeah. I told you, he took a vacay.
He's learning his footing.
He's learning in the mountains.
All right, so real quick, I just want to do a little bit of the info on the movie.
Yeah.
Since I said that this was a woman-directed romp, as it were.
And written.
That's what I wanted to say. Directed by Kathy Yan, who I wasn't overly familiar with as far as like her films go. She only did
one other one,
she
right?
She did Dead Pigs in 2018. I wasn't familiar.
That's the Bernie Sanders fundraiser video?
Possibly. Yikes.
Dead death to the pigs.
Yikes.
Don't eat them.
And then Christina Hodson is the screen.
I don't care. Sorry.
Christina Hodson was the screenwriter for this, and she wrote Bumblebee in 2018.
Right, which was another, you know, hey, we've got this giant mess of a franchise that nobody likes, but here's this kind of cool movie that didn't suck.
Oh yeah, that's
I
the
like
one
that
with
one.
John Cena.
Haley.
He goes, "How are we?"
John Cena.
Yeah,
because he has the best line in all of Transformers. He's like, "Well, we have to follow these robots because why? They're literally called the Decepticons. Does nobody else realize that?
Deceptive Decepticons."
That's really funny. That's really funny.
That's it.
But Bumblebee, legitimately, I actually really enjoyed. It's the best of the Transformers.
She wrote that as well. So I really I thought that this was a nice departure from Suicide Squad, which was absolute dog shit.
Oh man!
And there, I have like a lot to say about the things that I thought made this film so much different. And as a lady, that I really thought that meant a lot to me to see a movie like this. Like, I can't tell you guys how awesome it was to just have the camera observe what Harley Quinn was like doing and not ass, tits. Like, it was.
You mean like Suicide Squad?
Oh, sorry, Brian's class. I'm serious. I mean, you look at a male directed film, you look at a woman directed film. I mean, the angles are so very different, and for this to not and you might roll your eyes at me, but John, but
yeah. Remember, this is a podcast.
Yeah, sorry.
She looked at me.
Well, I looked at you and I was like, am I gonna call him out? No. Yes. Yes. It was me not wanting to call you out more than anything else. And then I decided against it.
You verbally did one of the people in the room. So.
Sorry. But I
this is awkward now.
Yeah. It's fine. No, I've called him out at worse. But but you may roll your eyes at me. But like, there's a lot about comic movies that you're very aware of the male gaze.
Oh yeah.
Like with. With
I'm gonna roll my eyes at that.
especially with like Black Widow, that is all she is ass for the most part, and two in The Dark Knight Rises in a different franchise, Anne Hathaway's Catwoman, that was so much ass. Like, for us to have this interpretation of Harley Quinn where what she's doing is more important, mm-hmm. and for the camera angles to be that much different, I came away from that film being like, wow, the cinematography was good. And maybe it was, but it mostly just didn't focus on women's parts,
yeah.
and you could see like the things that they could do, and there were a lot of really great aerial shots, and you could get like the expanse of a whole scene in ways that you don't see when it's male directed.
Yeah,
Lane, are you saying that B-list performance artist magician Christopher Nolan, guising as a director, objectified women?
Oh, well, it's what we wanted to do, love. We wanted to get on that motorcycle and make sure her pants suction to your buttocks. Good. All right. And get on there and make sure we'll prop up the back of the motorcycle, too, so it looks like you're just ready for penetration. And then you can shoot out an ejaculate from the front of the motorcycle, saving everybody. We'll zoom in right on your butthole. No, what's that? Oh, we'll zoom in on the thing being blown up. Oh, all right. Play good. Don't let any spoilers out. We got to put Joker things around the town.
Wow. Is that like behind the scenes footage that you
found? That's behind the scenes
footage. Yeah, that's Christopher Nolan.
That's amazing. I didn't know that was a thing.
I love Christopher Nolan trailers where it's like, coming soon, the new movie from Christopher Nolan, and then you see somebody sneeze to like, fall. Like, whoa, I gotta see that one.
It's true. But hey, getting back to my point though, I can't tell you guys, because it's not aimed at you guys, I can't tell you what it feels like to try to be in this sandbox and like to be spurned at every turn.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm always told I don't belong. I'm always told that this world isn't for me. And you know, from being in a comic book store and trying to find something for, I was trying to buy something for you, John. Like, this was years ago. This was like 10 years ago. I was trying to buy a comic book for you. And I'm going to call them out. I was at Edie's. And made fun of me for being a woman. And they turned me away. And,
not comic book store employees.
Yeah. And
no, this is why you always go to New Dimension Comics, proud sponsor of Ready, Set, Geek.
Ooh, well, hey.
Was that New Dimension Comics?
New Dimension Comics. Location, everywhere you want to be.
Wow.
But yeah, but you know, so like, I'm told there I don't belong, you know, and a lot of the times, like, I don't feel like I could relate to any of these characters because a lot of them are male, but yeah. The women characters are so thin. They're very masculine and they're just there for the body parts, well, you know,
I've always felt that the way that comic book films and even the comic books themselves have represented women have always been ridiculous. I mean, I remember when Avengers Age of Ultron came out, and I think it was Subway or some other fast food joint had partnered with Marvel, and they were releasing like cups with all the different characters on it. And I remember that there was a Black Widow one where it quite literally was just like Scar Jo's face and her ass. And just...
Where can I find this?
That's it. No, no, but my point is
John
that...
John needs to go get a six-incher real quick. Yeah.
John already has a six-incher.
No, but my point is just like, that's ridiculous. It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen.
Well, and just the way that it makes fans of cinema... of this genre feel, you know, as women, you know, it yeah. does separate us.
Yeah.
And I think this is a large part of why I have been so exhausted with Marvel, because they don't handle women characters very well.
It all feels like the male gaze. They quite literally said years ago, when Age of Ultron came out, they were like, no one wants to go see a Black Widow film. The boys don't want to go see a Black Widow film.
A lot of their merchandising is...
Yeah.
They specifically weren't putting out...
Yeah.
Toys of Black Widow.
Right.
So you had an opportunity to capitalize on, hey, we do have a prominent female figure, whether it's, you know, problematic or not.
Right.
They still chose to say, eh, but she's an also-ran.
But
Yeah, it was the same thing with Jurassic Park when that came out. There was a Timmy toy, but there was not a Lex. And the actress apparently that played Lex broke down in tears in Toys R Us because there wasn't an action figure for her.
I just want to go back in time.
She should have ran in high heels, and then they would have given her one.
Right? Yeah.
And you know,
but the thing is, you know, that's little boys are going to play with Jurassic Park toys, not you know little girls. That's their thinking. And Lane, to kind of piggyback on what you said, you look at you know Patty Jenkins directed Wonder Woman. She's not overly sexualized, and then you get the greatest feminist ever, Joss Whedon. directing Justice League.
Zack Snyder.
Yeah. And, you know, there's shots that are panning in on her ass in tight leather pants, and it's like, it's exactly
they're not even wearing, like, honestly, like, it was ridiculous when I saw Justice League. I'm like, since when did the Amazons just, like, say, yeah, you know what, we don't need functional armor?
Well, the shot I'm talking about specifically is when Bruce Wayne shows up on his jet, and she's waiting for him, and the shot is coming from below, and her butt is slowly just becoming, like, invading the whole screen. It made me happy, but it's not exactly get the male gaze direction.
Like the depictions of the Amazons in both films are very telling.
Yeah.
Like in you know Wonder Woman, the Amazons are wearing functional armor.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, they're wearing functional armor.
Well, I mean, and two, and if I could kind of do like a master's class briefly for you guys on female form and fashion. So female, comma form, comma fashion.
Mm-hmm.
So. One of the things, you know, I do think that Wonder Woman was well handled, no problem. But one of the things that I do think is that it was very classic in the sense that, you know, Gal Gadot is so fucking beautiful. Mm-hmm. And her clothes were very beautiful, you know, and that does fall in line, again, with being there as a part of society for, you know, the male gaze. What I really liked about Harley Quinn, I'll let you guys in on a secret. Women who really, really love fashion, and not every woman loves fashion, but I worked at a fashion company for a number of years, and so I was around a lot of that stuff, you know, and the next level, you know, kind of stuff. Women love doing fashion for other women.
Oh, okay.
And so we don't always want to look good, you know, and this isn't always a sexual thing, because obviously women can be in love with women or be sexually attracted to other women. But, you know.
Not on this podcast, damn it.
Yeah.
Fuck that. But, you know, sometimes I'd walk out the door and, like, John wouldn't be crazy about my outfit. And that's how I knew I had a winner, because I knew the fashion girls or women, the fashion women I worked with would love it, because that's what fashion is for. It pushes
the
boundaries.
Just for our gaze?
It's not just for your gaze, and it's not just pretty.
Right.
You know, sometimes fashion can be funny. Sometimes it's about different shapes and making things a little bit weird, you know, like wearing like knee socks with chunky sandals, and, you know, or having like a skirt, you know, with kittens on it, you know, like shit like that, you know, sometimes, because for me, I think fashion can be funny. So sometimes I have like, you know, some weird stuff.
Yeah.
I have like a zombie skirt that I think is hilarious, you know. And so what I loved about Harley Quinn is that she is not traditionally attractive. Margot Robbie is a gorgeous woman in real life.
Yeah.
They did a real good job of making her not really for anyone's gaze. I mean, just she's so pale, which a lot of people don't really find attractive. I mean, she's ghostly in that.
It's not her fault. As a juxtaposition to...
She's not that pale in real life. You can't be that pale.
It's because the Joker made her take a bath.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
I would say probably the most watched scene from Suicide Squad is Harley Quinn changing into her clothes, surrounded by a group of men.
Yep.
We're like, booey!
They're like, oh my God. Right.
And they put it in the trailers, and they put it in everything. Mm-hmm. You got to go see this movie. It's the chick from Wolf of Wall Street. And now you can go in and say, hey, this is Margot Robbie. You got to go see this movie and see what she's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Which, just to circle back to the film, again, the Suicide Squad was an amazing trailer for an awful film.
Mm-hmm.
And Birds of Prey was an awful trailer for a really great film.
Yeah, and I think that the way that they handled all the costuming and everything, I really felt like these characters were dressing for themselves, and I felt like it fell in line with their characters because, you know, in the one scene, so we'll get into kind of the plot a little bit, where, you know, we're going over the fact that Harley has broken up with the Joker. Well, I guess the Joker broke up with her.
Which, thank God, by the way.
And right.
We'll get into that in a minute.
And again, that definitely is something we need to go over. But there's this one scene where she's had too much to drink for the evening, but she's in this like weird sweater that's like literally made of like bits of trash. It's like sparkly, but I'm pretty sure there's like crime scene tape stripes in it. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah, and just like, I just loved that because it just seemed like something like a real, you know, crazy woman would do, you know, like she wasn't trying to be sexy. She liked it, you know? And I think that was a lot of what was cool about this movie is that like Harley Quinn just did whatever the fuck she wanted after she was done with the Joker because she wanted to do
Part of her weaponry is her sexuality though.
I mean, maybe another iterative. But let's just talk about this movie. You know, I know that there's a long history there, but I don't think she used a lot of that in this film, really.
But I'm very glad that they did separate her from the Joker because the whole character of Harley Quinn is based on being in an insanely abusive relationship with a sexual sadist maniac.
And they did not handle that well in Suicide Squad.
Well, the thing is,
It became a meme of, like, find a man who treats you like this.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait, no.
What is it? Hot Topic?
No. Find the fucking opposite.
That's OJ.
Yeah. A very pale OJ. I don't want to see his 440, the Joker. I don't know. I don't think he could. I don't think Joker's winning a Heisman.
I think kind of going back to female writers, female directors, and female empowerment in this movie, the scene that really, really puts the menace in Ewan McGregor, his black mask,
great.
He was great. And he chewed every bit of scenery except for one scene where they really had to show, you know, this is a bad guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he makes the woman who's his friend at the club stand up and like have her dress torn off and dance for me. And it's like no score, nothing. This is a bad human being. Well,
it reminded me of Vince McMahon doing that to Trish Stratus.
Right. Yeah. But
get on your knees,
there's
Trish.
Our wrestling thing for the day.
Yeah.
I'm wearing a Ric Flair shirt, so you're good.
But I think the thing is, like, Black Mask, most cursory fans of the movies only won't know who the hell Black Mask is.
No.
You know, but
nerds like us were kind of, I don't know if you guys were upset about how, in a way I was upset that he wasn't necessarily like the comic book Black Mask, but I kind of loved that at the same time because Ewan McGregor was my favorite thing in that movie.
So, yes and no.
Yeah.
Black Mask had a little bit of a renaissance, really kind of starting with the Jason Todd stuff and War Games, which is a great Batman series, where he really was more like this.
Yeah.
More like the portrayal in the film. And I've heard that a lot. But if you're looking at 1960s Black Mask, yes, he was, you know, mustache twirler, and here he's much more of the mentally unstable Roman Solanas character that Ewan McGregor did inhabit. So I didn't feel there's only one character in here as a comic book purist that really kind of like, don't do that, not to her.
Who's that?
That's Cassandra Cain.
Okay.
So, sorry, if you can finish. I just wanted to say something about that scene that you were just referencing.
Oh, go nuts! Yeah.
Oh, cool. So, so the scene that you're talking about with Roman, Ewan McGregor's character, you know, going kind of crazy. What kind of spurs that is that he's, you know, he's not mentally stable and he's getting kind of paranoid. He's upset about something and he's kind of paranoid, and this is what causes him to make this woman get up on the table and has someone tear her clothes off. I thought it was interesting. I think it's a Margaret Atwood quote. I hate that I don't know offhand, but I think it's a Margaret Atwood quote that men are afraid that women are laughing at them, and women are afraid that men are going to kill them. And I thought, like, what a beautiful illustration of that. Yep. Like, that, because there's so much tension in that scene, and he ends up not killing her, but. There's
Need the violence of the situation. And it was not, the control.
Yeah, and it's interesting that it wasn't sexual or exploitative in any way. It just was scary.
Wait a minute, Black Mask. I thought this was the Obi-Wan origin story.
Oh, honey.
This was, like, this was back when he was just a racist.
Yeah. Oh, honey, we have to talk.
But no, Ewan McGregor, I thought, was fantastic.
He was.
Oh,
no, you're fine. I'm sorry. I kind of jumped on you. I apologize.
I just hate to say about a movie that is about, like, great female characters, and like how it's so great to have a female lead and then all the main characters be women. The one that I really walked out loving was Ewan McGregor.
You know, but he's shown here.
Penis rules.
But he also, he had like a feminine quality to him as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
He was flirty with the Margot Robbie character.
Yep.
But you had Chris Messina right there as Victor Zsasz, and they had like this weird psychosexual chemistry.
That's true. They had great chemistry.
I walked out of there. I was like, that was Chris Messina as Zsasz, because he did not look anything like.
Were they supposed to be lovers, or was it?
I think it was.
Or did they both just get off on violence?
I think it's an implication of that there's some pegging going on.
Maybe a Smithers thing.
Yeah. A Smithers thing. I love it.
That's You're so good funny. At turning me on.
Yeah. You should probably ignore that.
So funny. Well, let's talk a little bit about like how the thing progressed. So the plot of the movie was kind of sort of like a Deadpool kind of thing where we jumped back and forward in time. It wasn't totally linear.
She's narrating. She's talking right to the
audience.
It's
very Deadpool.
And that wasn't. Yeah. And that was maybe the only aspect that I didn't like love, because at first I was just like, what? Like, I don't know. Because we've seen it before, you know what I mean? So
I think this movie wasn't linear, though. That was what I think saved it from seeming kind of average, being like, oh, now let's go back and find out how this happened to get to here. And I'm like, oh, this is a great way to tell this.
It started to work, I think, for me after the first like main plot point. In the very beginning, it's just like a lot of like chasing and running, and I was like, ah, what's going on? Yeah. So we kind of start things with realizing that, you know, Harley Quinn has the Joker's broken up with her for good this time. And she's like kind of trying to find herself, and she doesn't tell people right away that they're broken up, because that's kind of like a protection for her.
Yep.
Yeah, being like, everybody hates her.
Gotham. Yeah, because everybody hates her, because, I mean, let's be real, she's been kind of a dick to everybody. And so she kind of starts to pull herself back together. She gets like a little apartment. She gets a new pet. It's a hyena. Spoiler. And
named Bruce.
Yeah, she names it Bruce, and she literally names it like after Batman. It's the greatest thing. And she has an all night bender, I guess it's fair to say, and she then has the great idea. And one of the things I loved, I have my best ideas when I'm drunk. I was like, girl, we all thought that in our 20s, didn't we? And so she grabs this, like, I don't know, tanker truck or something, and she just drives it into the chemical plant where the Joker, quote unquote, made
Ace
her.
Chemical plant.
It was their special place. Their special place.
No. Tim Burton says it's Access Chemicals.
Tim Burton says it's Access Chemicals.
And she drove into it, and just the drama of the fireworks and her walking away from it. I mean, just so funny. It's so funny because like her boot gets stuck in the truck, and so you see her like limping like with one heel, because when you only have one high heel, it's like up down. Like the walk is just everything about it was just
shame.
Hilarious. You know, it's just funny.
Without even having sex, unfortunately.
And like, I think the most meaningful relationship was between Harley and the egg sandwich. Is that right?
So the most sexual shot of the entire movie
were two egg titties.
Slow
two
motion. Egg titties. Yeah. was that egg sandwich, and if they don't find a way to be able to tie that in for a promotional thing, man, I wanted that egg sandwich.
No joke. I swear to God, bro. I left this movie and I went to Sheetz and got a fucking breakfast sandwich.
Do you want to explain the egg sandwich?
Yeah, so after she's, you know, she's had her evening and everything, she's hungover as shit. And that's her favorite thing is when she's hungover. And so she goes to this, like, very specific spot.
Bacon. Where it's cracked egg,
yeah,
fried
bacon,
eggs.
Two eggs.
Expired cheese.
Cheese.
Just enough hot sauce.
And yeah, just a tiny, because she wants to taste the cheese. Yeah. And it's just a little bit of hot sauce. And on this, like, grilled, it looked like ciabatta to me. She called it something else, but.
Yeah, it was like almost a ciabatta or sourdough.
Yeah, it looks so good. And so it's, like, all wrapped up, and she's like, ah, and that's all she wants in this world. And so when she's just about to open it, that's when the cop comes after her. Rosie Perez's character starts to come after her, and it's a whole chase scene with her being chased by the police. She starts to run into all the people that want to kill her because, you know, obviously everyone decoded her message that, you know, she and the Joker broke up, so they're, you know, she's not protected anymore.
Right.
And at the very end of the chase scene, the egg sandwich just flies through the air and goes and, like, falls to the ground. There's no saving the sandwich. She's like, it took losing something I truly loved to realize the, like, direness of my situation.
It's on the posters and stuff. If you take a look at the posters, it's like flying egg sandwiches and
stuff.
Oh,
my God, really?
I didn't notice that.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Isn't it fun to talk about a DC movie and, like, laugh and, like, wasn't it fun to watch this movie?
Oh, my God, no.
Wait a minute. Fun in a DC movie?
Yeah.
Seriously.
That's crazy.
No, motherfucker. Yeah. You went and we went to Batman v Superman and you had some adult beverages and I had to fucking drive. That wasn't fun for me at all.
And no. I accidentally owned that movie. Because one time when I was home alone, drinking by myself, don't judge me.
I don't judge you for drinking by yourself. I judge you what you do when you drink by yourself.
Here's what happened. It was like 1:30 in the morning. I'm like, I'm going to go to this movie another shot. And I went to rent it on Amazon, not realizing that I bought the fucking thing. And I buy, like, nothing permanently on Amazon. So I have, like, three purchases on Amazon. One of them is Batman v Superman. I own that for fucking ever.
Was it the Criterion edition?
It was the Snyder, like, the Snyder director's cut.
Oh, my God.
So it was, like, 6 hours long.
You know, you can literally write into Amazon and be like, I didn't fucking mean to buy this.
No,
and
it's too late now.
Well, I didn't realize
I
started watching it.
Now it's too late, but if he'd done it at the time, if you don't watch it, they'll give you your money.
So every time I go to my Amazon purchases, I'm like, oh.
It's just sitting there. Mocking you.
Hashtag you're the worst. Yeah. But anyway,
it's
really nice.
Dawn of sobriety.
Yeah.
It's really nice to actually find some joy. And I think that this movie did have a lot of joy because it was very funny. It was very quirky and, like, you know, light.
Yeah.
You know, but still, I thought, like, had a nice tone throughout. You know, I had mentioned the screenplay writer earlier. I thought that there was, like, a nice hand, like, done with the dialogue and done with, like, kind of the pacing of everything.
Yeah.
I thought
you definitely saw the model as being, okay, we want to have the irreverent tone of Deadpool. Mm-hmm. We want to have kind of an unreliable narrator. We want to play with the linear format. And once I kind of figured out what they were doing by the end of it, and I think we'll talk about that more, like, what are we getting out of this film? I really thought what they did was brilliant. I thought it had a much stronger third act than Deadpool did.
Yeah.
Yeah, the third act I really thought was actually very good.
But the chemistry and the uniqueness of all of the characters. So you had Huntress. Mm-hmm. You have, which was Mary...
The crossbow killer?
Mary, yeah. Elizabeth Winstead.
Right. Rosie Perez was Renee Montoya from GCPD,
mm-hmm.
Which is a phenomenal character if you even go back to the Batman animated series.
Oh, man. She was great in the animated series.
She was awesome in that, and then she got really fleshed out in the comics and GCPD, and she becomes the Question, and she's has issues with... being a drunk, and she's a lesbian, and Ali Wong has a cameo as an ex-lover.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was handled well because it wasn't a big deal.
No, they just, like, no, they were just...
They just were. Yeah.
Yeah, that was really nice to see.
Who am I missing?
Dinah Lance.
Oh. Yeah, Dinah Lance, who I really came away with, like, who is she, and what else could I see her in?
Dinah Lance.
No,
Black
the
Canary.
Actress.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's Journey Smollett Bell.
Yeah.
She was in an episode of House and an episode of Grey's Anatomy. She's been on a lot of TV. She's amazing.
I want to see pretty much what else she does.
This is like long overdue because so I'm like the queen of she was on that show that one time. Like I always see
she did a Law and Order, really?
Yeah, I saw
everybody
I'm
did Law and Order and a Star Trek
as an actor.
I'm always the queen of like bit actors, but I am such a big fan of Journey. I think she is so talented, and I didn't know she could fucking sing like that. And she can sing.
I mean, interesting to see what you do with a different interpretation of that character, because a lot of people. Like myself, you know, I know Dinah Lance, Black Canary from, you know, the Arrowverse.
Right.
And seeing a different interpretation of that is refreshing, because I mean, Black Canary has always been kind of like, hey, you're there in the Arrowverse series. Right.
Which is different from the comics, where she's one of the toughest characters, was a leader of the Justice League at one point.
Yep. Yeah, and she's very strong-willed in this movie.
Hot take? I don't like, I mean, when it's Justice League or something, anything goes, but I don't like Batman universe with characters that have some level of superpowers. But
interesting.
I'm not a big fan of like Clayface or Killer Croc.
That exists, though.
They did such a good job building to it.
I thought so, too.
They alluded to it. When the moment came, it made a lot of sense.
Just villains with superpowers makes Batman seem completely useless. I mean, I know that we've talked about this a million times on the show, that he can use his genius mind.
That is his superpower and his money.
But we saw that was I hated that in Justice League where like Batman is just getting his ass whipped by an evil Superman because he's just a dude.
Well, I thought what was nice in this case about Black Canary is that her powers came at a cost. Like she was able to use them, but man, she passed the fuck out. You know what I mean?
Right. And they did a great because Black Canary comes with this amazing lore that goes way, way, way back.
Sure.
And in like one line of dialogue, they address that. And they say, you know, you could be who your mom was. And her mom was that same character, didn't have the superpowers, but her mom was like a Batman. Have you ever read, God, it's so bad, and I hate you, you're already looking at me, but All-Star Batman and Robin, that's the first time that you get to see them in that same sort of era. It's awful. It's terrible. Yeah. It's absolutely the worst. Don't read it now that I mentioned it. Ryan's class, you're too young and susceptible. Don't let it happen to you.
Don't go to the comics and get that.
But yeah. I liked that they addressed that. I liked her hero's journey. I liked her embracing what her powers were, what it meant to her. I felt like that was an earned thing.
Yeah. Well, I thought that a lot of these characters like had a lot of growth, you know, throughout the whole thing, and for her to do things that she didn't want to do, but felt like that calling, really. You know, I thought that was cool to see, you know?
Yeah. And I know that sometimes on the show we break down plot point by point, but this movie to me was very much like Robert Altman meets, Deadpool, Tim Miller?
Yeah.
Robert Altman meets Tim Miller meets Quentin Tarantino. Like, it was a lot of, like, non-linear, like, you know, oh, we got to go back and, like, you know, we got to follow this character. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's very difficult to break down plot point.
Yeah, well, the main deal was, like, there was this, like, famed diamond that had the coordinates of this...
The Bertinelli diamond.
Yeah, the Bertinelli diamond that had the coordinates etched into it of the Bertinelli family fortune. And that's what everyone's looking for in this movie. What happened is, you know, Black Canary is working for Black Mask, not totally knowing how fucking evil he is yet. And she and Zaz are tasked with picking up the diamond because at last they found it. And this kid swipes it.
that's the Cassandra Cain character,
mm-hmm.
who is the biggest departure of all of the characters from their comic roots.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
So they have one scene where she's, you know, in the police office, and they're like, oh, Cassandra, what'd you do? And she's like, ah, she scratched her throat. I'm like, oh, okay, maybe we're going to get there, because she doesn't speak in the Batman comics.
Oh, interesting.
And she's the Batgirl who was, like, super badass.
Oh, wow.
And is one of, like, would go one-on-one with Bruce.
Well, she becomes Batwoman.
Right.
But she's mute.
She's mute because she was raised by two of, like, the greatest assassins, and she was, that her dad was David Kane, and he was a master assassin. He beat the shit out of her and trained her on how to be, like, this absolute killer.
Wow.
Yeah. So she's a little, like, what would happen to Hit Girl?
Wow, okay.
So that was, and she's a very, like, powerful force. Interesting. Especially of like feminine characters in Batman. Like, she was toe to toe as a fighter with Batman.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's interesting that they did go so far from the comics, because why not just make it Beverly Smith? You know what I mean?
She doesn't have to be Cassandra. Really, my only quibble.
Yeah, right. It could have been anybody. It didn't have to be, especially when, for the average audience member, this room has three humongous Batman nerds and somebody who likes Batman quite a bit. I'm looking at you, Lane.
Yep.
But the thing is, like, to the average audience member, they don't know Black Mask. They don't know Victor Zsasz. Right. They don't know Cassandra Cain. Like, so you don't have to make a Cassandra Cain, especially if the only people you're appealing to are the ones that know that well, are going to be annoyed by the fact that she's not like she is.
Right.
And there's other characters who are very similar to that in the Batman universe or in the DC universe. You could have said, it's this person. You would have been like, oh, okay, that kind
of
makes sense.
I would love to know the decision-making on some of that stuff, because maybe they have plans for her later.
I thought that there was a moment at the end where they could say, okay, the same people that had trained Huntress, we're going to send her off there so she can be safe.
Oh, okay.
And I thought that something was going to happen to her vocal cords.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Like, she would get her throat slit, but she was saved, but she couldn't speak anymore.
Right.
I thought that they really could have done something, and I'm like, you just kind
of
didn't.
I mean, the only thing I could think of is, and I don't know if DC is this methodical the way that Marvel is just like, well, let's introduce the character now, and then subsequent sequels.
That's what I was wondering, Brian.
I really don't think it's that.
Yeah. I don't think they're thinking that far ahead anymore.
Which women are in the Batman universe?
Yeah, yeah.
That one.
And it's also like, most people know that Cassandra Cain is a very female empowered type of character.
Right.
Like, she was one of the first.
She takes over the League of Shadows.
Well, she was one of the first Batman, like, main core Batman characters to be a lesbian.
Yeah.
You know, she was, that was groundbreaking thing at the time.
You're thinking, don't change Catherine Cain to Cassandra.
Oh, that's a different
Cain.
One?
Yeah. There's two different.
Oh, my God.
So Catherine Cain is Bruce's cousin.
Okay. Okay.
And she was a character from way back when.
Right.
This was Cassandra Cain.
I've got
my
Cains mixed up.
One's K with a K. And Cassandra is Cain with a C-A-I-N.
Gotcha. Okay.
But she was the one who was in, who had the mouthpiece stitch closed. She came in.
What are you young men talking about? Who's your favorite ball player? Huh? You want to go hunting?
Right. So in this one, though, Cassandra Cain, I mean, she's a child.
She is.
And she has these shitty foster parents.
She
was
like 16?
Something.
I thought maybe 15. She seemed kind of young. But she has these shitty foster parents. She's a pickpocket, and she ends up lifting this diamond, and she swallows it, and that's why she coughs in the police station. But we don't know that yet because of the nonlinear storytelling. and so this whole second half of the film is Harley Quinn has talked Roman into not killing her because she's gonna find his diamond. And then everybody else of his, like, assassin friends all of his assassin friends are looking for the diamond because he knows Cassandra has it, but it's in her, and they're just going to, like, it's like the question of, is she going to poop it out? Are they going to gut her? It's like a whole thing.
But that pissed me off so bad because Roman wants to kill Harley Quinn because he knows that she's not with the Joker anymore. And you could tell early on in the movie, like, he fucking hates her because the Joker, he hates anybody that has power over him, and Joker has power over everybody.
Of course.
So, yeah, when he finds out, like, hey, we have Harley Quinn, let's go torture and kill her, boss. You know, he's like, oh, yes, that sounds good, because I'm Ewan McGregor. You know, he's doing actually a very good accent in the movie. But she's like, I can get you the diamond. I think I know where it is. And he's like, okay, I'm going to let you go by yourself. But if you don't come back with a diamond, I'm going to kill you.
It's like, you could kill her
and
now.
And then later in the movie, they go, hey, boss, she ran off with the girl and the diamond and there's nowhere to be found. He's like, God damn it. Like, how did you not see that coming?
Just take one of your goons. He triggers everybody else at the same time.
Yeah.
So he does, he's like, cool.
To go get the
you
girl.
You go do that.
Not
go,
to
you
follow
go get
Harley.
The girl. No, that's what they were tasked to do.
Yeah.
And then you go make sure she's going to do what they want. Because then when she finds the girl, the people are there and descended upon her.
It's true.
So,
it's true.
And that also was right before the scene which I thought was really cool. A, he smacks the hell out of her. And she has a dream sequence.
Yeah.
That, which was really cool. It was like
Mary Lambert's going to sue somebody.
It's Marilyn Monroe singing Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend, but it's mm-hmm. Harley. So, A, that's the second time that that song's been in a movie with Ewan McGregor, because you also have Moulin Rouge.
That's true. Yep.
But they were in, like, weird fetishistic headgear.
Yeah, and
it was
so
really trippy. Cool looking yeah. scene.
It was so funny because it just seemed like he just knocked her that goofy. Right. You know?
But at the same time, you saw this look in her eyes where she liked him for a second. It was very, very subtle.
Yeah.
And it goes back to her like previous power dynamic.
And her madness, yep. I thought. Like, it really right. captured like her madness.
Yeah, but it almost becomes like, well, it's not Rain Man because Cassandra Cain is not mentally different. But like somewhat of a road movie where she has to learn to be like a parent to the so there's a like much Rain better Man. Example.
You mean yeah. Harley Quinn. You mean said Harley Cassandra Cain.
Sorry. Well, Cassandra Cain and Harley Quinn together. Yeah.
Okay. Let's not call people Rain Man, honey. It's it's 2020.
There's a whole subgenre of road movies. You picked Rain Man.
That's 2020.
The first thing that came into my head.
You
yeah.
could have picked.
Nobody has autism in the movie.
Listen, you could have picked yeah. Pee-wee's Big Adventure or Pee-wee's Big
Holiday. Yeah, let's call Pee-wee's Big Adventure. That's. I mean, it makes more sense than what I said, but still.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember that scene where she just threw all the toothpicks on the ground?
Yeah, man. Coffee almost came out of Chris's nose. You got to be careful. Yeah,
what's a better example?
I literally was like, where is it going with
this?
Where
is this? An example of she had to learn to be like a parental figure.
Or even just not a shithead. She was like a big sister, kind of.
Yeah.
So or
that
big
was,
sister.
There was one story that I was listening to with Margot Robbie, and she was talking to the filmmakers, and kind of the edict was, okay, how are we going to make this Harley Quinn's hero story, mm-hmm. her journey?
Yeah.
And Margot Robbie kind of, again, going back to that Deadpool scenario of knowing the character and knowing what's happening, because no, we're not really going to redeem her.
Yeah,
she's not a good person. She's not a great human being.
But if we don't redeem her, how can we sell Hot Topic things?
Yeah. I'm glad they didn't try,
memes.
Though.
Yeah.
I'm glad they didn't try, you know, because I thought that it was important to be realistic to the character.
I think it was originally the DC edict, and she was like, no.
Good.
We don't want to lean too much into, you know, she's not joining the Justice
League.
No,
she's if anything, I'd say she's an anti-hero.
Yeah, and she really does kind of play both sides.
That's where it's at. It's you're an anti-hero. You're not a hero, but you're also not exactly a villain either.
Well, and they did a good job leaning into
that. Yeah, and I thought what was beautifully illustrated is when she breaks into the police station with her fun gun. I mean, she shoots people in the face, but with a glitter bomb. You know, like, obviously people got hurt, but she didn't kill anybody.
She didn't kill any of the police officers, which was a very smart decision.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because then
that's not how you make
a
hero of
your
movie.
Swath of
yeah.
what are they called? People. But then you go into like the bad guys. Okay, we can kill them.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
I thought that was really.
It was like
smart
the Terminator 2 thing. Like you can't kill people. Why?
And plus, the colored smoke and the glitter was just a joy to watch.
Yeah.
Let's be real.
The choreography in general. It's the same team from John Wick.
Oh, nice. Wow. Yeah. It was really well done.
That they filmed it was great. And I love that it's not hard cut. For Brian's film
class. You mean like
just
quantum
you have people
it's not
that
a film
know
class,
how to do
it's a
it.
Podcast class, it's but a, well, okay.
It's probably class. A lot of turnover between the two. Yeah.
If you're into podcasts, you're into film.
Yeah,
that's
good.
True.
That's how this whole medium started.
Yeah.
That and sports. Anyway.
It's a very fluid camera.
Yeah, they were able to keep
hashtag
it.
Fluids.
And they didn't do shaky cam like David Ayer. They didn't have to deviate from what made it great. They just, keep it on them.
It was very lyric, I thought, too. Like, there was almost something elegant about all of it. You know, the movement. I thought that was cool.
I thought the third act filmmaking was awesome.
Yeah, I did, too.
Although, I will say, you know, I'm assuming by this point, when this episode comes out, if you're listening to this, you've seen it. And we've already mentioned tons of spoilers. So, but at the end of the movie, like Black Mask brings essentially his goon army to get the diamond and to kill Harley and just and end all this. And he brings in like 80 of his guys without guns. Now, granted, don't shoot the girl because she has the diamond. But at the same time, go ahead and shoot her, and then you can cut her open. Why didn't they bring guns in?
Is it because the heroes didn't have any guns?
I think they had guns.
Well, no, they were all fighting each other with bats and mallets. The warriors,
but. Well, yeah, I mean, because they said not to shoot her, I guess. I mean, I guess that's
why. No, they
didn't
even say that. It's literally just a bat mallet pipe fight because.
Yeah,
if they brought in guns, they would have won in 4 minutes.
Yeah. I guess. I mean, if you're gonna go there.
No. Okay. So the interior scene, they didn't have guns.
In this fun house, which was so awesome.
It was great.
Once they get outside,
once they get outside, yes. Now it's it changes the dynamic. So, yeah, I didn't really think about it, but at the same time, I had like a moment of once we've beaten this boss level, now we have to go outside. Now it's gunfire. And the tone actually changes.
Yeah.
And
it does.
It's no longer bright neon. Now the stakes feel very real. And then they up it.
I mean, this time. John, are you saying that a comic book movie is not as the same as real life?
Oh. You know, the thing is, like, you know, this movie
not
is.
The Ninja Turtles. They were allowed to use their weapons.
Yeah. This movie is absurd, like, to begin with. Yeah. And it is a comic movie by nature are absurd. But, you know, I'm thinking to myself, if he wants these people dead, like, there's a scene where they're, like, preparing for battle and they don't. Think about the skylight, and guys are coming in through the skylight. If they had guns, this would have been over in about 12 seconds. Shooting as they rappel down. We win! Harley Quinn is meat chunder! Closed casket!
All right, so I want to point something else out. Just getting away from that a little bit. I thought what was really refreshing about this movie, and I know I've talked about the male gaze and like femininity and feminism and whatever.
You're talking about broad stuff.
Broad stuff. But what I really liked about this movie is that a lot of times, especially in the Marvel universe, it's, you know, it's like, oh, we're going to have a woman, but she's going to be really hard and really tough and really badass. So it's basically a man, but with like body parts that we all want to look at, you know, that they want to look at.
Yes.
What I really liked is that, you know, Harley was very feminine in this. She had her pigtails still. She was on fucking roller skates. Like, I felt like those feminine qualities of her weren't tamped down.
Yeah, same with Black Canary and even Rosie Perez. Because they talked about putting the bodice on.
Yeah, and like
she was like, no, listen, you're okay. You have to be able to protect the girls.
Yeah, and like and just like, you know, oh, I love how high you can kick in those tight pants, or just like complimenting each other, because that's, I mean, listen, drunk in a bar bathroom, let me tell you about the friends that I have made. Like, it just felt very real, you know, and just I liked that they didn't do away with like actual femininity in the face of making them all, you know, badass.
And it's funny, they even had like a level of, because Huntress is not like that. Not how she was raised.
She was raised outside of society, and basically.
And it's great because she is like almost a Marvel badass where she comes in. She's like, haha, I can do this. And then it shows her like practicing how to say the lines in the mirror.
She's like, kind of like Drax, where she doesn't understand how to human.
They humanize her in such a way almost immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And so you see her start to become a more three-dimensional character.
Because they're a good
influence.
They're
aware of the bullshit that comes with these kind of movies. And they're like, let's address it outright.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Because
her coming
so
cool. in, I am Huntress. It'd be like, that's kind of stupid.
Yeah.
But if we watch her practicing it, and everybody calls her crossbow killer. Ha-ha, it's
her
funny.
Her practicing in the mirror.
I'm not the crossbow killer.
Yeah.
Her practicing in the mirror was absolutely hysterical.
Why doesn't she work with me? I like crossbows.
Hysterical. I mean, some of these lines, guys, like, I thought the dialogue was real good.
So, I think my favorite line, just to pinpoint, because there's a great moment that never gets pulled out, is in the middle of this third act fight scene. You're following all of the other characters, and again, very fluid camera work.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, Harley Quinn, like, skates by everybody. And then she starts beating up people while she's on roller skates. And I was sitting next to Lane, and Lane goes, when did she get roller skates? And then then one of the characters goes, she had time for a shoe change?
It was awesome.
And like, I was like, that's just fantastic.
Because I said it, and then they said it.
Did you guys think that it was strange that this movie had the balls to kill Victor Zsasz and Black Myth?
You were very upset.
No, I wasn't upset. I thought it was a shocking thing that they took characters that are, granted, C-level characters in terms of
I would say
a popularity.
Zsasz has already been, this is what, like his fourth adaptation of being a character.
But the thing is, but the fact that they killed them off, I mean, these are known characters, not like Penguin or Riddler, but they're known characters.
Well, I think at that level, you can kill them off.
Yeah.
You know?
And plus, Black Mask's death was fantastic.
It blew oh, my half. God, yeah. With the chunks?
Yeah.
The chunks were ballsy. Screaming. I
like,
loved it.
I came out of that and being like, that's already a tough movie death to beat.
Yeah. Oh, so good.
Do yeah. the okay, guys, do these movies have to be R-rated? These DC movies have to be R-rated to succeed?
Yes.
I think that it's yeah. better yeah. because yeah, I think that it's so much more realistic that they all said fuck, because you're not going to say tiddlywinks or darn it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that felt more real because the line you like, Chris, when the fuck did she have time to change her shoes?
Right.
You know, like, that's more realistic. I'm sorry. I'm just a filthy, you know, pirate mouth, but.
The way I view it, that's honestly, why we love you. The way I view it, honestly, is that Marvel has a lock on the PG-13 crowd-pleasing average comic book film. That is their bread and butter, okay? I do not see them coming out with, I mean, with the exception of, say, Deadpool and the future Deadpool movies that are going to be coming out of that studio.
They're going to be PG-13 as soon as the mouse.
No, they're going to, no, they're not. No, they're not. They're going to be.
Said, yeah, they made, like, $1 billion yeah, for two
no,
films.
No,
they're good.
They'll stick with the R-rated film. But the point I'm trying to get across is just that's what Marvel does well. They do well with the broad, crowd-pleasing PG-13 film. But what DC has tried to do up until this point is do the same thing, is do the crowd-pleasing PG-13 film.
Well, and they didn't do the crowd-pleasing thing.
Well, they tried. but they still tried to play it safe. And I think the thing is if you know your competitor is doing this, why not up the ante and just say, yeah, you know what? We're going to do R-rated versions of these. You look at this film, you look at Joker. The Joker is an R-rated film, too. But and
the argument could be made, though. I mean, I loved Joker.
Yeah.
I thought this one was pretty good. I loved Logan. I really liked Deadpool. But aren't these movies made for children?
No, I don't feel like a fight scene where she gets superpowers from having cocaine blasted in her nose.
But no, I'm saying,
oh God, that was so good.
But you're saying the
comic books in general are made for children, and well, the R-rated ones, like, do we need to appeal to just like 35-year-olds? Like, why aren't these for me?
Well, I mean, personally, I think that the comic book medium. You know, it may have started off as for children, but I don't think that it is just for them anymore. I mean, we're going to talk, about graphic novels and graphic novel adaptations in a future episode.
Yes.
And a lot of the ones that I know that we're all picking are not at all just for children. You know, some of them are very hardcore, deep, serious, dramatic films.
Right.
That maybe have a grounding in this childlike medium of just looking at pictures and, you know, having
I'm not being dismissive that this is comic books are for 3 years old to death. Like,
yeah.
They're for every age group. But to only make movies that are for, you know, an older generation, when characters like Batman and everybody in the DC universe could be for everybody. The Avengers, let's just say the first one.
Yeah.
That's a movie that you can enjoy it at any age,
yeah.
And it doesn't placate the small children. It doesn't just humor the older generation.
I think the thing, though, is that comic book films have the capacity to address serious issues. They have the capacity to have more, advanced adult issues. And I think that it is shortchanging it. Now, you mentioned Avengers. How deep is Avengers on a scale of 1 to 10?
1.
Yes. So that's my point, is that on a surface level, Avengers
Joss
is great.
Whedon is a 1 as a human being.
Right, but my point is what is that film really about? It is about a group of people who do not like each other eventually coming together to fight a bigger evil. Yeah. All right. That's great. But what else is there to it that? If I take that film and I compare it with, say, this film, which has a couple different levels on it, and even Joker, we're dealing with more advanced emotions here. We're dealing with more advanced storylines
here. But is this like with Star Wars and comic book movies and things like that? Are we basically our generation, the millennials, turning into boomers? Like, no, it has to continue to be about us. Don't be for the new people. Like, I want a gritty Ninja Turtles because I'm 35 and I don't want them to be silly.
No,
I want them to stab people's heads off.
Here's the thing, man. You know. Like, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think that you have to be gritty. I don't think that you have to be overly saturated and bright and colorful. I think that, and now this comes down to everything, you know, movies and comic books are reflections of the time that they are made. They've always been that way. So I've always viewed that the Dark Knight series is a reflection of a post-9/11 America, where we are now concerned with terrorism and we are concerned with, you know, homeland security. Like, that is ultimately what it is, you know, and the idea that, you know, one person can amass, you know, all this money and be able to counter these things through technology of his own wits. That's honestly what I viewed those films as, is in that lens. I view Joker, for instance, as a reflection of the Trump years and of the absence of addressing income inequality and an absence of addressing mental health issues. That is why that film was made. And honestly, like, you can watch that film and you'll get that those elements of it.
Hashtag kill the rich.
Yeah, but seriously, like, it's a reflection.
It does kind of infer that.
It does.
All rich people know the words to every Gershwin song.
Apparently. Yeah. Apparently. Yes. But my point is just that it doesn't have to be gritty. It doesn't have to be bright and colorful. But it has to reflect the time period that they're made. That's just my opinion. I think Avengers, honestly, is an escapist film.
Should the Robert Pattinson Batman movie be rated R?
No.
Yes.
But
it doesn't have to
okay.
be.
Here, okay, like, it I want to piggyback a little bit on what he's saying, because
yeah,
I think that yes, what you're saying is 100% true. Brian, yes, pronouns, pal.
Yeah, pronouns, pal.
If Quentin Tarantino wants to make a Star Trek movie,
yeah,
okay, we're yeah. all in, right?
Yeah.
We want Quentin Tarantino to make the movie that he's
going
to
make. I think it's going to be a disaster, but I'm all in.
I don't think he's doing it now.
I don't think so either. But yeah. like cards right, on the right, table. Right, right. Quentin Tarantino comes to yeah. a studio and says, hey, I want to make a Star Trek movie. Star Trek's going to be like, yeah, okay. He goes, hey, I want it to be rated R. I'm like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Do what you need to do.
Yeah.
Tell
yeah.
the story you need to tell.
Yeah.
Avengers told the story it wanted to tell.
Yeah.
And again, it's over a banner where does that film need profanity? Does it need
no.
ultraviolence? Does it need, okay, now you have a Birds of Prey movie. Did they need that? Probably. With the way that they wanted to
Maybe.
Tell and the hard edge that they wanted the stories. Does the Joker, Todd Phillips, comes up with this script? Sure. And
I'm getting that you
and,
don't
and says,
believe that.
he comes up and he says, hey, this is the movie that I want to make. It's a Joker movie. It's a hard R. And they went to him and said, well, we'll green light it and we'll give you $200 million to make it, but you have to make it PG-13. Because, well, that's not the script that I wrote. That's not the vision that I have. That's not what I want to do. I'm doing Mean Streets meets King of Comedy. Yep. Okay, go make that movie. So yeah. I think we have the ability right now, again, to go back to studio is letting the filmmakers make the film that they need to make. So you can have a PG-13 Shazam movie. You can have a PG-13 this. You can have a PG-13 Batman movie, because Batman, I don't think, needs to be a rated R movie.
I do.
I don't. I don't.
You know why I do? Because I've never seen it.
But, okay, so what do you get with a rated R Batman?
I think you get the stakes being raised enough for
F-bombs. Batman. I'm gonna call you out as a comic
okay,
fan.
Okay.
We have seen rated R Batman once. What did we get?
What was rated R Batman?
All-Star Batman and Robin.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't need Batman to say I'm the goddamn Batman. I don't need that. I don't
know,
need...
but I think the thing, the way I view it though, is I'm not necessarily talking about Batman himself, you know, saying, you know, fuck this and fuck that. I'm saying that I need the situations that Batman is up against to be the level that he would have to overcome. Now, I've never really seen, with the exception of, say, Dark Knight, you know, a situation in which Batman is faced that is that dire. You know, I don't think you could take, say, Long Halloween and make that PG-13.
I think they did.
Nah.
I mean, you had parts of it in Batman Begins.
It.
You had parts of it in that.
But I like, just...
What part of that?
I just think that... If from a studio perspective, all right, if I'm coming off of Joker and I'm coming off of Birds of Prey, now, obviously, we haven't talked about this, but Birds of Prey, despite the great things we're saying about it, did not perform well.
Opening weekend. On opening Oscar weekend, which always performs low.
Yeah,
Harley Quinn should be
mad. But come on, man. I mean,
this is bull crap.
Here's the problem, though. Their budget was $84 million. They only made $31
million. I'm projecting that to make at least $100
Okay.
Where are the men to pray? I think it's going to have legs.
Okay. And honestly, you're right. Oscar weekend definitely had a hit at it. But I'm looking at the successes you've had with this film, because the reviews of this film have been very well.
Yeah.
And the successes of Joker. If I'm going in there and I know, all right, my rated R stuff, for the most part, has been successful to some degree, why would I then go back and say, you know what, Batman coming out, that one also has to kind of be that PG-13.
Because comic books are for everybody.
But correct, but I'm just saying that if your track record of rated R stuff is doing well, why not do that with Batman?
Because you are isolating all of the back end stuff. You're going to have a hard time doing. You're not going to go out and see merchandising rights for Birds
Logan
of Prey.
Was a great
outside.
I mean, Deadpool
didn't have a ton of toy tie-ins,
and Deadpool had no choice but to deal the route they did. But Logan was a great standalone. Going back, you know, to Marvel,
I
don't think every X-Men movie should be Logan. But I love Logan for being unique
now,
by itself.
Now, can you go into Walmart and buy Old Man Logan toy?
Yeah.
You absolutely can. There is a merchandising aspect that still has to be handled.
I just view it that Batman is such a dark character, okay? You go back to the comics. Batman has its roots in dark stories. Why would you undercut that by making it PG-13?
I don't feel the absolute need to make it. Now, if, again, you have a filmmaker that says, look, here's my script. You read the script. Holy shit, this is great.
Yeah.
Okay, you got to go make this.
Yeah.
Now, whether the edict is you have to do it beforehand and write a script that's PG-13, so you're allowed one effort.
Yeah. Which they never do.
How would they make...
They never do that.
How would they make The Dark Knight R, for example? That, in terms of tone, is... as adult of a movie as you get, how do you make that movie R? Do you throw in a bunch of fucks?
No, I mean, I'll be honest with you. The one caveat I had against The Dark Knight is that Batman is beating the shit out of the Joker and you don't see a drop of blood. Yeah. At all. Nothing. He's literally beating the shit, bashing his head against glass.
But other people in that film got bloodied.
Not really. Not really. Harvey Dent's face is charred off, but you don't see any... Like, it's the problem I have is with PG-13 films, especially dealing with the dark subject matter, is that there are no real consequences of actions like that. I've always viewed that because Batman is a human who is dealing with real stuff...
Fascistic sociopath.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, he is. But the point is that because the fact that he doesn't have superpowers, because the fact that he has to rely on his mind, and that because the fact that he is physically putting his body through the rigors night after night and is inflicting damage on people, that there should be reflections of that. Now, they did, kind of hint at that sort of thing in Dark Knight, and especially in Dark Knight Rises, but I'm sorry, he's beating the shit out of the Joker. Harvey Dent's face gets blown off, and there's really just like, well, it happened. There's no reflection of it.
Yeah, I just think if you push that too far for the reasons of pushing it too far, what you get is Affleck Batman going into the warehouse, snapping bones, and then murdering people.
Yes, but at the same time, that was comical. That was comical.
It was. I felt like that was more of a
But that wasn't rated R either. But I'm just saying it's the same sort of thing. He's doing all that shit. And there's no consequences to it. There's no results of it.
I think that I agree with you to the level of I like that they're bringing on filmmakers and saying, what kind of movie do you want to make?
Yeah.
This is the movie that I want to make. Okay, that's a hard R. Yeah, we want it to be a hard R. This is what we're leaning into. Mm-hmm. This is what we want to do. This is what we want to accomplish. You know, and we have these demographics of success to be able to back us up. And then the studio went to say, okay, cool, make your film. Marvel, you're never going to get that.
To finish the thought here, imagine if there was a Batman film that was designed with the same levels of character as, say, Watchmen.
The movie or the
both.
Show?
Both. 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 Well, the show the is really good.
Yeah.
Well, but no, my point is just that you can look at, say, the movie and the show, and those are hard R stuff, right? But they're dealing with the same sort of subject matter, vigilantes. You know, people without superpowers.
But wasn't that purposely made to be
hyper-violent?
It was. Yeah, but
this
but,
is the opposite of what other comics are.
Right, but I've always viewed that that was closer in line with, say, Batman than, say, any other superhero out there. You know, and that's just what I'm saying is I would love to see a Batman film that isn't afraid to go there with, say, the violence, with, say, the stories, and with, say, the elements of Batman. And that's the thing, is every Batman movie we've ever seen very rarely goes into the trauma that Bruce Wayne is dealing with. Very rarely.
I just don't feel like we've seen his parents die enough.
Well,
I agree.
That's not what I
want. Wait, his parents
well,
were killed?
Here's what I want to say,
Chris, you kept such a straight face. You're my hero.
Here's what I want to say, though. What we've never really seen what comes after that. You know, Batman Begins gives us a little bit of it, you know, for about the first half of it.
Mask of the Phantasm.
But, right. But
God,
I mean,
I
yeah.
love that movie.
But my point movie. Is just that that is a trauma that we really have never seen. I'm not going to talk about Gotham because Gotham kind of blunders it.
Gotham's terrible.
But
Gotham is the prequel to Tim Burton Batman and Robin.
Yeah, it is. But the point is just that I think that there are the trauma of that should be explored, and I think you can do something in the vein of, say, the Joker, but with Batman that is dealing with a more darker subject matter. What happens to a little boy who watches, you know, his parents get murdered in front of him? You know,
well,
how
I
does
think
that
of X2 like? I'll never forget being in the theater when they're invading the Xavier School for Gifted Youngsters, and Wolverine just stabs that guy in the chest, fatally screaming and pulls his claws out. I'm like, yeah, he just murdered a bitch. Yeah. Yeah.
Where's blood at?
But I didn't need him to be squirting blood out like Quentin Tarantino directed
it. Well, but no, but that's...
It's still a violent murder.
Yes, but for God's sake, it's like Looney Tunes.
I know, but I think we're talking about hyper-realism.
I'm just asking for fucking realism, man.
Like, sure.
I'm not even asking for Quentin Tarantino level. I'm just saying, like, if someone gets stabbed in the chest by claws, I should see some fucking blood,
man. We're
going
into a lot of the nitty-gritty details. I'm just saying that, like, I think we're slowly seeing our generation, in terms of demographically, being less and less relevant, and I see us fighting back violently and saying that everything has to be made for us when they are made for us to some degree, but they're not the same.
I think we hold on to it. So the boomers carried on. they took they want the economy, and they want America, and they want everything to go their way.
Yeah.
What the way that our generation fought back was the things that we grew up with, video games and comic books and movies, and we won't let that go. And
we have
we
an ownership.
Forced those mediums. You gotta stay
with
us.
Yeah, we're adults now, so we want an adult version.
Right. Well, for me, it's not even necessarily that. It's just a matter of I've never really seen that in a film. You can say All-Star Batman, but I'm just saying that I've never seen those stories done with an adult sensibility.
I love how Elaine is checked
kind of what
I'm not checked out. I think that you guys are having an interesting conversation.
That's just my point.
I can see both ends. And I was just thinking, you know, I think that the obligation is to the screenplay itself. You know, Chris, to your point, you know, tell the story you want to tell. And I think in this case, I think that the R rating, for the reason that I said before, I think that it was appropriate because I think that the language is really important because like that's something that drives me crazy about The Walking Dead. Fucking zombies. I'm going to say the F word all the time.
Every
but,
day.
You know, AMC, you can't. You know what I mean?
Every day.
So
they had that scene where if you watch The Walking Dead when they're captured at Terminus, like the season finale for TV, they had to say, you know, they don't, you know, Andrew Ling's like, yeah, they don't know who they're screwing with. But they did a take aim saying that they don't know who they're fucking with because they had to because, like, we can't not say they don't know who they're fucking with.
Right.
And, like, we'll probably put it on, like, the unrated DVD Blu-ray or something.
Yeah. Right.
You know, but, yeah.
But I think in this case, I think that, you know, Birds of Prey being rated R was perfectly appropriate.
Was the Venom movie
PG-13.
Yeah, John, PG-13. It doesn't.
I feel like we have gotten away from Birds of Prey. Yeah, I think we're having a good discussion.
Sorry.
Any other final thoughts on Birds of Prey, guys?
Yeah. One of the things I kind of want to go back to the movie is Birds of Prey, and the subhead is the fabulous emancipation of one Harley Quinn, and what. I thought that they did.
Fantabulous.
Fantabulous, my apologies.
Get it right!
Well, I gotta leave
now. Yeah, get out of here!
What I thought that they did, and we were talking about how they introduced the characters almost retroactively, and they used Harley as the springboard, is you now have a Birds of Prey franchise with established characters, and you have Harley going off on her own. So I don't know if she's in James Gunn's R-rated Suicide Squad movie or not, but
I know Will Smith isn't in it.
Thank God! Oh,
he was so good.
He got so jiggy
with it.
With it.
Dad! Don't shoot her! Don't shoot her for me, Dad!
Oh man! I have to give Carlton my gun, man.
Why doesn't he want me in his movie?
Why don't he want me, man?
Why don't my daughter want me to kill, man?
Sorry.
So, but what I love is that they did very smartly establish this badass cadre of women.
Yeah.
You have, hey, here's a film that does that one need to be, you know, going back to the PG-13 already. Yeah. Does that one need to be that? Probably not.
Yeah.
But then we can do this thing and still have that vein of film.
Yeah.
And then you can bring her back in.
Yeah.
They didn't make it like this everybody come together Guardians of the Galaxy ending.
Yeah.
They made it very Shazam still and still kept her on her own path without the complete redemption. And I thought that was a brave move.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a fiscally smart move.
Yeah.
Which DC doesn't do often.
No, they don't.
Well, I was doing some reading on it, and I think Gotham City Sirens could still be on the horizon. I don't think they've ruled it out yet.
But that's supposed to be Poison Ivy, Catwoman, and Harley Quinn.
I really thought Poison Ivy. I think
they canceled that. But
I mean,
yeah, but they
can
still go
well,
off
that
and
was
do
supposed
that.
To be first.
Margot Robbie wants to make that.
Yeah, that was supposed to be first, but then Birds of Prey took precedent. Yeah. So
this is going to sound really petty, but should this movie not have been called Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey?
No, it's Birds of Prey and...
Yeah,
the
but the Birds
fantabulous.
Of
it's but Birds the movie's, of Prey is the header.
Yeah, and I'm just not sure it should have been.
It should have been
either,
Harley Quinn. Should have been the title
because Birds of Prey weren't fully assembled until like the very.
And the movie's about Harley Quinn.
Really,
it's an origin story for Birds of Prey.
Right.
Interesting.
Right.
Interesting.
And then her story ties into it. It's the end.
That's why it's kind of like tacked on.
That's
and I liked.
It's really about Harley Quinn.
It's saying we have these two franchises, and we're going to combine them.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And then we can send them on their separate ways.
What about Harley Quinn and the Birth of the Birds of Prey or something like that? Like, it's just as long and convoluted of a title. I don't know, because the movie was about Harley Quinn. It wasn't
the
really
movie
about
was
the
about
Har-
she was your focal
I mean,
point. She, was your...
she was the Iron Man.
Yeah. Interesting.
So to speak.
Interesting.
I mean, I thought that was cool that they did that.
Batman Forever was an origin story of Robin. It wasn't called like
Robin
and the
Forever.
Foreverness of Batman.
You should have called it Batman and more parent death.
They should have called it Batman and Robin. Oh, wait, no, they made that the fourth
one. Or maybe like, you know, Robin and Batman through therapy session.
Yeah. I would have loved Batman and the emancipation of
one Dickie Grayson.
One Dickie Grayson.
I mean, his parents died, so he was, in a sense, emancipated.
Yeah.
Oh.
Too much. Sorry, guys.
And the last thing I'll make about this is the kind of gender fluidity of everybody.
Yeah.
You had kind of a, I don't know if you want to call it a non-binary role in Ewan McGregor. He kind of
loved
was
it.
Everywhere.
Loved it.
Right at the offset, they're showing Harley Quinn in previous relationships, and they highlight that there was a woman.
Loved it.
I kind of thought at one point that they may do something with Poison Ivy, or that she was just going to show up in the third act, kind of like as an out-of-nowhere thing. It would have worked, it would have not worked, and that film was so kind of hit every mark, I would have thought that it would have worked too.
Well, their genders gave me fluids.
Jesus Christ.
I know. I had
even
to...
Ewan McGregor.
We talked about fluids. I'm really sorry, Brian's class.
That's cool.
That poor, they, never mind. That stain's still going to sit on that couch.
I liked, to that point, Chris, you know, sexuality wasn't the most interesting part of a character. No, it was just part of a character. Yeah. And right. I think that that's smart writing. That's a good writer. That's good work done, you know? More of maybe, that, please.
Maybe Hollywood should start letting more broads write and direct movies.
Yeah, yeah, no kidding. No, maybe. No fucking kidding.
I mean, who thought they could do more than bake a pie?
I did.
I'm here for the Irish woman.
Yeah, damn right. Awesome. Well, Chris, thank you so much for coming on.
Definitely.
Your wealth of knowledge really, really helped with this episode. I loved hearing all of the background.
I love listening to the show. It's very well edited and put together.
The editing is stunning, actually. Yeah.
You should teach this.
I should teach that, huh?
Somebody should pay you.
I bet he
no,
looks...
but I love the show. I love what you guys do.
Thank you.
I think you guys like Joker too much, but that's fine.
I don't love it. Well, I'd love it to death.
Let's talk about it later, Chris. I hated it. Let's talk about it later.
So I would say 7 out of 10 for the emancipation of Harley Quinn's face.
I'm kind of in the same boat.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think, Chris?
It's closer to a 6 than an 8.
Let's go 4 quarts of John's fluids out of 5.
Oh, oh wow. That's a lot of fluids there.
I know. He was severely
is that
dehydrated.
Blood too?
he needs At some point, it just becomes
just
blood.
Yeah.
He lost a lot of protein. So
there's a lot of spiders in it. That's normal, right?
What's that chafing smell?
Chafing smell? Whoa.
You get to 4 quarts. It smells.
It's also Chris, where can they find you at on Facebook and Ready Set Geek? Is that still
So we're looking at bringing stuff back. We took a hiatus because real life happens.
It happens.
Don't you hate that?
It happens.
So career changes and whatnot. We want to start focusing back on bringing content. We do a lot of top 10 lists. We do some fun discussions on Instagram at NDC Ready Set Geek. We're also on Facebook at Ready Set Geek. And anywhere that your local women's lingerie providers can have.
And you guys are still out of New Dimension Comics, right?
We started building a home, and then they sold off that part of the building to Old Navy. So we started painting and decorating and doing all of this stuff, and now I have to figure out if we have a home now.
So it's because New Dimension moved to Waterfront, right?
Right. There was Century 3 is a hole in the ground.
Yeah.
That's where things go to die.
It is a dead mall.
Lebanon Church Road, Pittsburgh.
Minutes from the mall.
There is no mall. So, yeah, we were doing some stuff operating out of the Waterfront location. But just as a plug for New Dimension Comics, make sure you check out Three Rivers Comic Con. We'll be coming back this spring, and it is an absolute blast of the show. A lot of really fun guests. This is it's not Steel City. It's not where we go and spend a ton of money to see the cast of Saved by the Bell. It's actual writers and artists and creators from comics and them coming in and getting to meet those people. And then we have fun beer parties, and it's a really cool time. Sweet. So check out Three Rivers Comic Con.
Well, hey, let me know when Ready Set Geek's ready to go again, because I need to defend my crown because I'm a two-time champion. So I'm ready to go back.
Yeah, you and your two-time bullshit.
Two-time?
Awesome. I think that's all about Birds of Prey we're going to talk about there, then. I think we've talked about
There
that.
Were no birds. It's
there
bullshit.
Were no birds. What the shit, man?
There were turds, though. There were turds, though. Eventually, that girl crapped out that diamond.
Yeah. Basically.
There really was a turd of prey.
Harley had to go in and smush them poops until she found the diamond.
It's true. So I'm
in for that deleted scene.
Yeah.
So
they didn't have anything fetishistically for me yet.
Like Mr. J. Scrundle.
So when I
said Puddin, I didn't mean this.
You ended on Grundle and Puddin. That's it.
Well, I give it 8 egg sandwiches out of 10 because of all the feminism. And I can be found at LA_Croft on the Twitter machine.
John?
I don't know. Oh, the Unreal Gem. I don't use it
you
enough.
You don't know?
Yeah.
You were using it to go after Cool Cat.
Yeah, you're still going after reference, Cool Cat.
Yeah, I just tweeted him this morning.
Oh, of course he did.
Every time Cool Cat tweets now, my phone tells me, and I tweet back at him something terrible. I probably tweeted at Cool Cat more than any other person on this planet.
I mean, you have.
Yes.
Besides them and WWE.
Yeah. That's not at, well, I guess that's not. I'm just using the hashtag Raw when I'm watching Raw, if I can catch it live. Right. But anyways.
Oh, it's Unreal Jables.
Yeah.
You can find me at Brian Kindhouse on the Psycho Show page. Be sure to like us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram at Psycho Show. You can also find us on the Epicast Network, epicastnetwork.com. If you have a favorite movie or question you want to throw away, or you want to talk to us about your breakups from Mr. J, from Mr. J's Grundle.
Hopefully you haven't had a Mr. J in your life.
Yeah, hopefully you haven't. That's terrible. You can contact us at cinemapsychoshow.com. Make sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and iTunes, and we will see you next time.
Birds of Prey thongs, now available at Hot Topic.
I dress like Harley Quinn, and there are no cameras outside of the ones in John's room, and I'm very concerned.
Epicast. 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 Epicast.